a terrible tragedy occurring this weekend. If you haven't heard, Minnesota Vikings quarterback, cornerback Kyree Jackson died early Saturday in a car crash. He was 24 years old. The incident also claiming the life of two high school teammates. Investigators believe the car carrying Jackson and his teammates was struck by another vehicle attempting to change lanes while driving at a high rate of speed, and they believe alcohol may have been a contributing factor in the crash. There are a lot of different things that go through your mind when you see something like this, and there was a lot of talk, I think, yesterday and today of how devastating it is that this young man who's 24 years old, who just realized all of his dreams to be drafted in the NFL, will never play a game in the NFL. And I thought about that a little bit. And then there's the other football side of it, which I don't even want to go into because it's just not okay right now. But to me, Pete and Charlie, the one thing I kept going back to with this is someone's baby boy. Mm. And I am a father of two. Pete, I know you're a father as well. The idea that a young man at the age of 24 and that a parent, it's the worst tragedy in the world for a parent to lose a child. And if you read the articles, and we'll talk to Matt Collar next segment about some of the articles that he had written on this and got to know Kyrie. And everything we've heard at this point is he was an incredible young man who persevered through a lot. But he was someone's child. Mm-hmm. And to me, it trumps everything. I don't want to hear about football. I don't want to hear about where the Vikings are going to go next with the position. I don't care. I don't even care that he played football. The bottom line is, to me, this is a tragedy that happened because someone else, not him, made some really poor choices that night. And now someone's child is dead. Three people are dead who were children of parents. That's awful to me.
It's as awful as it gets. You can't even imagine something like that. It's so sudden and it is brutal. The only part of the football, Dave, that I would bring into it is that is how we know him.
Yeah.
It's what introduced us to him to understand, and it is sad. And I think one of the things that I look at from a perspective of both sides of it, just the human being side of it, as well as the football side, he's a guy who's persevered over a lot of different things. You know, growing up in Maryland and then moving around at various junior colleges and everything. And he never was embarrassed about that. Well, actually, that's not true. He was embarrassed about it for a little while and then started to pull out of it. And he really turned himself into a young man that was in college and working on his degree and also playing football. It is an amazing situation where you just can't even imagine it from the parent standpoint. It's unmanageable. Mm-hmm. It's awful. And the more that you read about somebody like Kyrie Jackson, you find out a little bit more about his personality. He used all of that background that he had, that all the three junior colleges that he went to, Alabama, where he went. He worked in a grocery store just to make a little bit of money. Yeah. This guy's got a really incredible personality that he was able to get through a lot of headaches, a lot of things that were holding him back maybe, and then he started to forge forward and move the way he did. Shoot, the guy almost went into the NBA. He wanted to play in the 2K league there. So his background is incredible, and his coach at Oregon, Dan Lanning, I love the guy already, and some of the kind words and some of the things that he had to say about Kyrie is absolutely impressive. Just what a great young man he was and a leader that he was. So whether it's not about the football side, but the football mm-hmm. side is a big piece of who Kyrie was.
Yep.
And it's got to be brutal. I can't imagine as a parent that side of it. I just can't imagine it with two. I have a daughter and a son, and I really, it's unimaginable.
I guess I thought as a country we were going in the right direction. There's so much emphasis on not driving while you're impaired, whether that be with alcohol or drugs or texting on your phone. And I looked up some statistics, and as of 2021 is the last time that this was measured, that's still 13,384 people were killed in alcohol-related traffic accidents. And 29% of those were between the ages of 21 and 24. Mm. When is this going to stop?
Yeah.
When are people going to decide to do the right thing and not be distracted and not be impaired behind the wheel? There's so much emphasis on this now, yet we still hear about this stuff. And Kyrie Jackson and his two teammates were just three of 13,000 plus as of, you know, in 2021. It's 31% of total traffic fatalities involve alcohol. So if you hear about this and you read about this, this is what has to stop.
Yep.
People have to make good decisions. And I'm not going to get into the politics of it about what the government and police should do and all that. I'm not getting into that. This is a personal decision that if you have too much to drink or even a little to drink or you are impaired, don't get behind the wheel. Don't text while you're driving. Don't be on your phone. Do the right thing. Save a life. It's probably not going to be your own, but it's going to be someone else's. And if anything comes out of this, if one person reading about this or listening remembers to do the right thing the next time that they are impaired, then maybe we'll start to get towards things going the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this is preventable, Pete.
Yeah.
This is preventable.
So it makes
making
it so
the
awful.
Right decision.
Yeah. Yeah. It is the right. And now we got Matthew Collar's coming up. So be nice to hear from him and from his perspective, how he heard about it and all of it.
Let's talk to we'll do that. We'll take a quick break early and Matthew Collar will join us next to talk about Kyrie Jackson. That's coming up next on The Huddle. We've been chatting about the death of Kyrie Jackson this morning, Vikings cornerback drafted just a couple of weeks ago at this point, fourth round pick. Matthew Collar from Purple Insider joins us now, our good friend who's always up on all of the Vikings news and notes. And Matt, I know that you had chatted with Kyrie Jackson on draft night, so I know that this has to hit you a little tough. But when you chatted with him, What did you take away as the kind of person he was, and as the, not just the football player, but the, you know, what he had to persevere to get to where he was at that moment?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're talking about Kyrie Jackson, it's more than just somebody who was another player who was drafted. It was somebody who traveled a really long road to be drafted and to have this opportunity. And I noticed in Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's statement that he mentioned the word resilience. And that was what I was thinking about quite a bit yesterday, because this is a guy that went to a small college to start and wasn't happy and went home and quit football and was living just with his parents and playing video games and working at a grocery store, which I can relate to. Around that age, I was kind of doing the same thing. And then he went to community college. He was inspired by a couple of his friends to get back into football. So he went to community college, and then COVID happened, which canceled one of his community college seasons, because you remember a lot of teams canceled their entire seasons due to COVID. So he had to, you know, wait through that. Then he gets an opportunity to go to Alabama because his talent is recognized by Nick Saban. It doesn't really work out there with the type of playing time that he expected to get. There was some bumps along the road. And he finally, at 23 years old, found himself at Oregon with Dan Lanning, the head coach there. They clicked in a lot of ways, and he maximized his talent. He had a tremendous, tremendous season last year. He was one of their key defensive players, great playmaker. I mean, he's also, you know, 6'4", and he had wingspan and mobility to his game that you usually don't see for guys that are that big, and athleticism. And he played with electricity. He played with energy and aggressiveness. And when the Vikings drafted him, I sort of laughed to myself because I thought Brian Flores is doing these draft picks, because this is his kind of guy. You know, this is exactly the type of player that Brian Flores would like. And when he talked to us after he was drafted, which, you know, had to be so rewarding for him, knowing that he had gone all through all of that to finally get here, you know, it just rings in my head now that he said that he wouldn't change a thing, that, you know, it really formed who he was and helped him grow up along the way to be prepared for this. And you could just see how much this meant to him to have made it through all those things. I mean, you think about all the players who would quit along the way, the players who would not go to community college, not take another shot, or give up after not getting the opportunity at Alabama, and all the players that don't make it, and he did. And you could see why, certainly an infectious personality. I wrote this yesterday that we kind of talk about sometimes who the most interesting or entertaining players after they're drafted are, you know, when we do all those conference calls, and Kyrie Jackson was probably number one. He just had a great energy to him, and it is truly heartbreaking that he will not be able to see through the rest of his journey.
You know, Matthew, I think you hit the nail on the head on absolutely everything, on who he was, who he became, the resiliency of bouncing back, obviously, from a guy who'd stepped away from it all and then came back and really performed well. He's got the size, he's got the speed, everybody's excited about it. Is the NFL doing enough for the players, do you think, early on? And I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just looking at what the NFL does, because I think the NFL does a great job generally on preparing everybody for everything, right? And they do a really good job of what they can say about financials, but also about the people you're with and what you do with your personal life and all those kinds of things. Is the NFL doing enough? I mean, we've had quite a few different incidents over the last couple of years of guys in their cars, whether they're have alcohol involved or not, but all of those different aspects of life outside of football, are they doing a good enough job helping out the players?
Yeah, I think that there's only so much you can do, and that they have rookie symposiums and things like that, and they have a lot of different people that come talk to the rookies, and they have programs for them. But you know, every year, I was telling my wife this yesterday, every year between this time, the end of mini camp and the start of training camp, I will never be comfortable, because there's so many players on the team. There's so many things that can happen. And what I was thinking about with Kyrie is that when you talk about several thousand NFL players, life is going to happen to these players along the way, right? There's going to be good people. There's going to be bad things that happen to good people, and stuff like that. And I think that with Kyrie Jackson, this was just wrong place, wrong time, bad luck. This could happen to any of us, right? Any of us could be driving and have what it sounds like was a drunk driver speeding, hit you and run you off the road. In fact, Chad Graff of The Athletic, who was on our beat for a long time and now covers the New England Patriots, this happened to him going home from TCO Performance Center one day. Mm. Fortunately for him, He didn't suffer the same fate, just some bumps and bruises. But the point just being that with Kyrie Jackson, hanging out with your friends, thinking about the next couple weeks and going to rookie minicamp and reporting and everything else like that, and then suddenly it's all taken away. And I think, you know, with this, it's just a reminder. If you're drinking, get an Uber. If you're thinking about speeding and running somebody off the road, remember that you could ruin somebody's life and ruin somebody's family and someone's dreams and take somebody away from so many people. I mean, to me, this with Kyrie Jackson was just entirely the worst luck possible for this to happen to him. And there's no way for the NFL to prevent that, right? There's only so much that they can do. I do think that over the years that they've really tried to impart in players to be responsible, but with him, he was the passenger of a vehicle that was entirely victimized here.
Matthew Collar joining us, a Purple Insider on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And I loved the way you closed your article, Matt, as you just said, that talking to Jim Peterson when Kobe Bryant died, that the only thing we can do when we lose someone special is to try to take something away from them. And you talked about, remember, getting behind the wheel, considering where you are and whether you should do that. And you brought up a really good point there that the NFL and, you know, there is that time between when the camp ends and camp begins again, or sometimes it's bye week. But these are legitimate concerns. I think, Matt, also with NFL coaches that they get worried with when players leave for a couple of days. I remember Mike Zimmer saying, you know, we just always tell players when they leave to make the right decisions. Don't do anything silly when you're away from here for a week. Have you ever heard that from other coaches, you know, whether it's Kevin O'Connell, whether it's Quisito Fomenza, that this is a concern for them when the players are out of their purview and responsibility for an extended period of time, that they worry about something that could happen?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. I mean, from any reporter who's covered the team for a long time, they would tell you that, you know, the coaches are terrified during this time because they are away and doing a lot of different things. And I'm sure, you know, even the stuff that's as small as jet skiing or whatever, or you know, I saw a video of CJ Stroud and Tom Brady throwing footballs on the beach. Well, you know, that sends me back to Robert Edwards, who was playing flag football on the beach and tore his knee and whatever. You know, I'm sure that it is terrifying. And I think, you know, if you're Kevin O'Connell, I was thinking a lot about him yesterday and how, you know, these first couple of years with Kevin O'Connell, the worst thing that's happened to him had been his quarterback got hurt, which is trivial in comparison to something like this. And, you know, this is sometimes we gave Mike Zimmer a really hard time for being as cantankerous as he was, and he certainly was. But also, when you think about the number of events that were similar to this that Mike Zimmer went through during his time, you understand why a guy who had been in the NFL for this long and it had tragedies happen to him throughout the years with players and you know, his wife and things like that, kind of how he became like that. And I think with Kevin O'Connell, this is a real challenge for him going through something like this, because it's the first time for him. It's been a little bit, and again, not everything perfect for him, but a little bit charmed over the last 2 years. Again, if fumbles and injuries are the worst thing that's happened to you, it's been fine as a head coach. And now you have to navigate, I think, what is the most difficult thing in all of sports, to go into this training camp and to go into this season and to lead this team through this, because it's so emotionally taxing for your team. And we saw it in 2018 when the team lost Tony Sperano right before training camp and how much that impacted them emotionally. I thought that hung over the team for the entire season because it hit them so hard. And this is, I mean, the rookies are going to report in like 9 days and they're going to report without him. And that is, it just, I mean, imagine you get drafted in the NFL and you're ready for your first rookie camp and then your teammate dies. I mean, I just can't imagine what that's like. So this will be, I think, very difficult for everyone, especially Kevin O'Connell, to have to guide his team through this.
Matt, thanks so much. We appreciate your perspective on all of this, and just a fantastic article on it in Purple Insider. And I know that you get to know these athletes as well, so I know that this hurts you as well, but I appreciate your time.
Yep, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Matthew. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Matt Collar from Purple Insider on the death of Kyrie Jackson. We'll take a break and come back. You're listening to The Huddle on 830 WCCO. We are just a couple of days, about a week here, until the All-Star Game. MLB All-Star Game. The starters have been announced. The reserves, I believe, will be announced this afternoon, 4:30 our time. And I know about a month ago, guys, we talked about, maybe a couple weeks ago, we talked about who might represent the Twins at the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. At the time, I think we had all said, I'm forgetting who we said. Ryan Jeffers, thank you. Ryan Jeffers was who we all thought. And my question to you here is, I think that's changed. Jeffers obviously has fallen off in the last month. So at this point now, in your mind, who becomes the lone selection? Because it does seem like they'll have only one selection in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game next week.
Charlie, you want to start it off?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Carlos Correa.
It has to be, right? I mean, there's no other option.
The other option, you could make an argument for Willie Castro, because you can essentially, the easy argument for Willie Castro is you can put him in at any position that is, right, you know, lower down the list. Oh, he's the fourth selection for right field or second, yeah, base or third base. You can say that, and that's really easy to slot him in, whereas there are really good shortstops in the American League, and you say Bobby Witt, you say Gunnar Henderson, and then I guess you say Carlos Correa at third. It has to be, though. It's just he's head and shoulders above at this point. I would love Willie Castro to be in it, but it's got to be Carlos Correa.
Couldn't you make an argument for – I'll give you two names that I just would throw out there, because I agree with you guys. I think Carlos Correa, but whatever happens, something different happens. Is Joe Ryan even a possibility? I know we're not talking about starters. We're talking about just getting into, mm-hmm, the All-Star game, right? So as you look at what he's done, how many innings he's pitched, what his ERA looks like compared to a lot of the other Twins pitchers. I mean, he's had a really nice run. His wins losses look a little different, but I look at the ERA over that. So is he a possibility? Or maybe even we've been talking about Jose Miranda. I mean, think about it. The guy doesn't strike out hardly at all, which is pretty impressive. He's hitting some home runs. He's got the RBIs, and now he's been on this streak. So it makes you wonder, does he kind of pop into this equation?
Yeah, I'd say Miranda doesn't have the ABs yet.
Yeah, right.
He just doesn't have the experience up here yet. Joe Ryan would not be the pitcher that I would look at. The other guy I think that's a possibility is Griffin Jacks out of the bullpen.
Yeah, well, I would have said Pablo Lopez could have made, but he's – go ahead, Charlie.
5.18 ERA, he's not making it an All-Star.
Not with a 5 ERA.
No, that's
you can look at the other, you know, metrics, 1.192 whip, but you can look at all these things. He's not making it. Joe Ryan, 3.29, it's good. He's good, but it's not All-Star. If it's going to be a pitcher, it would have to be Griffin Jacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Ryan's 24th on the list, he's only one game above 500. To give you an idea, I mean, like Seth Lugo, 11-3, Corbin Burns, 9-3. I mean, you got guys there that have some pretty – and ERAs, excuse me, in the 2.2 range.
Would it be fair, though, Dave? Would it be fair to on the other side of that argument, because we, mm-hmm, see this in a lot of sports, football, all the time, where you're looking at a player like Joe Ryan, for instance, you know, you look at his 6-5, right? But – has he gotten the support that he needed in those games when you look at his ERA? There are just times where our bats have not been as great as they, mm-hmm, are.
Yeah.
And maybe it's unfortunate for Joe Ryan that it's on the times where he's the starting pitcher.
Well, Pete, I'll tell you, not a single person that is selecting for these reserves in the All-Star game is looking at wins and losses. It's just not something that those guys do at this level anymore. Wins and losses are, like you said, because it's a team thing, right? It's not
team,
necessarily,
yeah,
Joe Ryan's fault that he's 6-5.
He's not,
he didn't get the run support. He has a 3.2 ERA. That puts you, the Twins, with the ability to win every game he's starting if you're giving up 3.2 runs per nine. You know, that's,
yep,
that's good. So nobody that's selecting is looking at that win total as something that would affect his entrance into the All-Star game. That, yeah, there's really three guys that I think I would not be shocked to see go, and that's Correa, that's Castro, and that's Griffin Jacks. Anybody else, that would be pretty mind-boggling to me. I just don't see any scenario where anybody else even makes the remotest of sense.
Mm-hmm. It'll be Carlos Correa. I mean, we know that.
Yeah.
The least,
yeah,
of which is that his name is bigger than the rest. I'd love to see Willie Castro would be great, just because of what he's put up. I don't know that. The name has to do with it. They do that. You know, I mean, like when you voted an All-Star. And granted, that is there a fan vote still a part of this?
That's
some
what
of the
starters reserves? Are for. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So yeah. So it'll be interesting. I'd love to see Miranda get in. I don't think. I think, unfortunately, the body of work is just too small at this point. But I think as the season goes on, I think we're going to see more out of him. You know, should he stay healthy, I think he's going to continue to be better.
Guys, yeah. And what I like about him so much is the strikeouts. And I know that I always point that out. Mm-hmm. It's just the one thing that I always like to look at is I want a guy getting the ball, you know, just hit the ball, right? And get yourself an opportunity. And that's where he shows up for me with only 35 strikeouts. It makes it sort of interesting. I know, and when you look at how many at-bats he's had, yeah, it's a little bit less than some of the guys in front of him, but nonetheless, I mean, he's a pretty much a gamer, right? With 72 mm-hmm. games, so
I mean, he's a piece of this team moving forward for sure. I think you're going to like this team moving forward, Pete, with the likes of Brooks Lee, who also doesn't really strike out. Heck, if Eddie Julian can get his eye back and not strike out, that would be great. There's a lot of guys on this team with that potential. There's also a lot of guys that hit home runs and strike out a lot. You know, that happens. But to your point, Dave, about it being a name, he's the best player on the team. You know, he's the best player on the team.
I'm just saying, my point is, if it were both of them, pretty like 100% equal, Correa would be the one that would go.
Yeah.
But it's not right now.
It's not. But your point also, as we were talking about it in the fast break, it goes back to my point of we don't touch this team shouldn't be touched post All-Star game. I really don't think
pitching.
So.
The pitching's bad right now. It just is.
Fine. If you can get a pitcher, but not I just the immediate roster and the level of, you know, maybe St. Paul, I just wouldn't give too much away.
Yeah, I mean, what's too much at this point is the question. We've gotten a lot of guys this year that have shown up pretty good. You got David Festa knocking at the door. You got Zebby Matthews down in AA who is absolutely dominating. You've got the knuckleballer, I'm forgetting his name, Lewis, I think, down in AA.
We are just a couple of days, about a week here, until the All-Star game, MLB All-Star game. The starters have been announced. The reserves, I believe, will be announced this afternoon, 4:30 our time. And I know about a month ago, guys, we talked about, maybe a couple weeks ago, we talked about who might represent the Twins at the Major League Baseball All-Star game. At the time, I think we had all said, I'm forgetting who we said. Ryan Jeffers, thank you. Ryan Jeffers was who we all thought. And my question to you here is, I think that's changed. Jeffers obviously has fallen off in the last month. So at this point now, in your mind, who becomes the lone selection? Because it does seem like they'll have only one selection in the Major League Baseball All-Star game next week.
Charlie, you want to start it off?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Carlos Correa.
It has to be, right? I mean, there's no other option.
Well, the other option, you could make an argument for Willy Castro because you can essentially – the easy argument for Willy Castro is you can put him in at any position that is, right, you know, lower down the list. Oh, he's the fourth selection for right field or second base or third base. You can say that, and that's really easy to slot him in, whereas there are really good shortstops in the American League, and you say Bobby Witt, you say Gunnar Henderson, and then I guess you say Carlos Correa at third. It has to be, though. It's just he's head and shoulders above at this point. I would love Willy Castro to be in it, but it's got to be Carlos Correa.
Couldn't you make an argument for – I'll give you two names that I just would throw out there because I agree with you guys. I think Carlos Correa, but whatever happens, something different happens. Is Joe Ryan even a possibility? I know we're not talking about starters. We're talking about just getting into the All-Star game, right? So is – you look at what he's done, how many innings he's pitched, what his ERA looks like compared to a lot of the other Twins pitchers. I mean, he's had a really nice run. His wins losses look a little different, but I look at the ERA over that. So is he a possibility? Or maybe even we've been talking about Jose Miranda. I mean, think about it. The guy doesn't strike out hardly at all, which is pretty impressive. He's hitting some home runs. He's got the RBIs, and now he's been on this streak. So it makes you wonder, does he kind of pop into this equation?
Yeah, I'd say Miranda doesn't have the ABs yet. He just doesn't have the experience up here yet. Joe Ryan would not be the pitcher that I would look at. The other guy I think that's a possibility is Griffin Jacks out of the bullpen.
Yeah, well, I would have said Pablo Lopez could have made, but he's – go ahead, Charlie.
5.18 ERA, he's not making it an All-Star.
Not with a 5 ERA.
No, that's
you can look at the other, you know, metrics, 1.192 whip, but you can look at all these things. He's not making it. Joe Ryan, 3.29, it's good. He's good, but it's not All-Star. If it's going to be a pitcher, it would have to be Griffin Jacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Ryan's 24th on the list, and he's only one game above 500. To give you an idea, I mean, like Seth Lugo, 11-3. Corbin Burns, 9-3. I mean, you got guys there that have some pretty – and ERAs, excuse me, in the 2.2 range.
Would it be fair, though, Dave? Would it be fair to on the other side of that argument, because we see this in a lot of sports, football, all the time, where you're looking at a player like Joe Ryan, for instance. You know, you look at his 6-5, right? But has he gotten the support that he needed in those games when you look at his ERA? There are just times where our bats have not been as great as they are.
Yeah.
And maybe it's unfortunate for Joe Ryan that it's on the times where he's the starting pitcher.
Well, Pete, I'll tell you, not a single person that is selecting for these reserves in the All-Star game is looking at wins and losses. It's just not something that those guys do at this level anymore. Wins and losses are, like you said, because it's a team thing, right?
It's
not
team,
necessarily
yeah.
Joe Ryan's fault that he's 6-5.
He's not.
He didn't get the run support. He has a 3.2 ERA. That puts you, the Twins, with the ability to win every game he's starting, if you're giving up 3.2 runs per nine, that's good. So nobody that's selecting is looking at that win total as something that would affect his entrance into the All-Star game. There's really three guys that I think I would not be shocked to see go, and that's Correa, that's Castro, and that's Griffin Jacks. Anybody else, that would be pretty mind-boggling to me. I just don't see any scenario where anybody else even makes the remotest of sense.
Mm-hmm. It'll be Carlos Correa. I mean, we know that.
Yeah.
The least
yeah.
of which is that his name is bigger than the rest. I'd love to see Willie Castro would be great, just because of what he's put up. I don't know that. The name has to do with it. They do that. You know, I mean, like when you voted an All-Star. And granted, that is there a fan vote still a part of this?
That's
some
what
of the
starters
reserves?
Are for. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So yeah. So it'll be interesting. I'd love to see Miranda get in. I don't think. I think unfortunately. The body of work is just too small at this point, but I think as the season goes on, I think we're going to see more out of him. Should he stay healthy, I think he's going to continue to be better.
Guys, yeah. And what I like about him so much is the strikeouts, and I know that I always point that out. Mm-hmm. It's just the one thing that I always like to look at is I want a guy getting the ball, just hit the ball, right, and get yourself an opportunity. And that's where he shows up for me with only 35 strikeouts. It makes it sort of interesting. I know, and when you look at how many at-bats he's had, yeah, it's a little bit less than some of the guys in front of him. But nonetheless, I mean, he's a pretty much a gamer, right, with 72 mm-hmm. games. So
yeah, I mean, he's a piece of this team moving forward for sure. I think you're going to like this team moving forward, Pete, with the likes of Brooks Lee, who also doesn't really strike out. Heck, if Eddie Julian can get his eye back and not strike out, that would be great. There's a lot of guys on this team with that potential. There's also a lot of guys that hit home runs and strike out a lot. You know, that happens. And but to your point, Dave, about it being a name, he's the best player on the team. You know, he's the best player on the team.
I'm just saying, my point is, if it were both of them, pretty like 100% equal, Correa would be the one that would go.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's not right now.
It's not.
It's not.
But your point also, as we were talking about it in the fast break, it goes back to my point of we don't touch – this team shouldn't be touched post All-Star game. I really don't think
pitching.
So.
The pitching's bad right now. It just is.
Fine. If you can get a pitcher but not – I just – the immediate roster and the level of maybe St. Paul, I just wouldn't give too much away.
Yeah, I mean, what's too much at this point is the question. We've gotten a lot of guys this year that have shown up pretty good. You got David Festa knocking at the door. You got Zebby Matthews down in Double A who is absolutely dominating. You've got the knuckleballer, I'm forgetting his name, Lewis, I think, down in Double A. They have actually minor league depth at the pitching mm-hmm. position that are just not ready yet. You could overpay a little bit with some of that minor league
pitching.
Well,
and you could argue that the window's now. I mean, that's a good point. You could argue you overpay now because their window to win at this point, I think, is the next 3 to 5 years probably, maybe even less than 5 years.
And I don't
– Is anyone's window open for longer than 3 years anymore?
And I'm not paying for a number two starter. I'm not paying for a number one starter. I'm paying for at most a number three, in which case some of those lower down the pipeline guys make some sense.
Give us a little bit better depth with maybe a starter,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's issue is Festick's coming up back and forth. You got a start coming up here in the next couple of days that we don't know who the starter is going to be yet. It could be, like I said, Randy Dobnak. Could be a couple of other guys down in AAA until
Do you remember when they started Randy Dobnak in a postseason game?
Yeah, that was a tough year.
What in the world?
In Yankee Stadium, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, like, what was that?
Why not do it in the biggest of the baseball stadiums, right?
Charlie, who's even like, and I don't scour the free agent lines in terms of like availability. What's a name that we would even look at as a possibility?
I can't say I've gotten too deep into that. I think Tampa is always willing to give up some starters, and they're always willing to trade. I have not looked too deeply at it at this point. Mm-hmm. And things change, too, very quickly here. Kansas City loses six straight. They say, screw it, we're going right. for next year. And mm-hmm. they've got some really great pitchers that could be on the move. Maybe they don't want to trade it in division. But a lot of teams can decide to bow out in the next week or two before we really get into that. So we don't really know quite yet what that pitching prospect pipeline might be.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll take a break, talk some more baseball coming up next. We have some pretty interesting texts to the stylesfinancial.com talking text line. We'll run through those when we come back. Beautiful day for a baseball game this afternoon in the Twin Cities. If you're going, Astros, Twins, 1:10 first pitch. Inside Twins is coming up after us today. Simeon Wood Richardson's pitches for the Twins today. He's 3-1 with a 3.52 ERA this year. We've got a couple of texts here to the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. Not the least of which is we talked about Pinky McNamara. We corrected the Dropo is Dropo. Hey there, guys. I can't agree with the fact that there's better pitching than there used to be. Jim Cott, Sandy Koufax, Bob Buell, Don Larson, Jim Palmer, just to name a few. So we were talking about this earlier when we saw this text come through, and we all agree that this is kind of ridiculous because there's no way that pitching was better in 30 years ago than it is now for the simple fact that they're just more athletic now. They have more resources to get stronger, to throw faster, to take better care of their body. They don't pitch as long, so they have better stuff. The pitches that they throw, I think there's a better wide range of them. This, to me, and I think we all agree, this is kind of silly. I mean, these were guys that were drinking beer all night as soon as the game was over, and sometimes heaters during the game. It's just crazy.
Second jobs.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Go ask Jim Cott if he thinks his stuff matches up with Paul Skeens. Go ask him. He's still around.
He'll tell you.
He will tell you no. It's absolutely ridiculous. And that's taking nothing away from those pitchers. They were absolutely phenomenal. They were the top of their game of their era. They had really good stuff. I sure as heck couldn't hit them. But it's ludicrous to say that the pitchers today are not better than the pitchers of 30, 40 years ago, the Sandy Koufaxes, the Jim Cotts. It's just the stuff is so much better.
But
watch it live. I mean, it's crazy.
I would take it a step further, as we said earlier, that I think every single sport, every position, every athlete is better now than they were 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
For the simple fact, and Pete, I'd ask you this, that, I mean, these guys have personalized nutrition plans for each and every one of them. Did you have a personalized nutrition plan when you played?
We did not. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of NFL teams back in the 80s, late 80s, that didn't even have their own area to work out. You literally went to gyms, including the Vikings before Winter Park was built. I mean, let's be honest. So, no, to your point, Dave, I think what they do today, these guys have masseuses, they have the diet, they have the nutrition, they have the weight training, all of that. These guys athletically are at a different level than it was 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, for sure. And you look at these offensive linemen, the guys that, are now in the Hall of Fame and some of those types of things, 265 pounds, maybe, and certainly not the same kind of bench pressing, not the same agility, speed, all of the strengths that they all have today. It's just different, and it's okay to embrace that. It was a different era, and now we're in another different era. And I can tell you this, 20 years from now, these guys will probably be much better. They'll have figured out something else that actually makes them more athletically suited for the position that they play.
The only place where I would say that there is an advantage 20 years ago as to now is in the simple fact that guys today and a lot of these athletes now have been playing their sport, and we've talked about this, have been playing their sport year round since they were 12 years old.
Yeah.
And 10 years ago, as soon as 5 years ago, there were off seasons for players, for kids. And they were or they were playing other sports. And you ask any athlete that, you know, Pete, in your day, I imagine you played 2, 3, 4 sports.
Yeah.
A different one every season. And so there is an advantage in that respect. And I think that's why we've seen a rise in injuries, because I do think that, that guys are getting injured way more now than they used to, and little injuries. And I don't think it's because players are, you know, softer. It's that their bodies are overworked by the time they get to be 20 years old.
I've always said this too. I think it's great to have 2 and 3 sport athletes, maybe even a 4 sport athlete in all the way up through high school. Mm-hmm. Once you get to the next level, you've got to make a choice. It is obviously we've seen guys that play basketball and football. I mean, we've seen all kinds of different combinations, but the reality is they want to focus on the sport that they are the very best at so that they can get to the very highest level. And so, yeah, when you're doing the same thing on a daily basis, to your point, there's going to be some injuries along the way because it's all you're training for. But it also makes you better before those injuries maybe start to jump on you. But it is an incredible thing. And I'll tell you what, these athletes today, when you walk into these gyms, Dave, you and I are going to go to some Gopher practices this year, and you're going to see these guys. And we're going to drag Charlie along, and we're all three going to be standing there, and you guys will look at these guys just wondering, what on earth am I looking at? To be on the field with them is something totally different than what we even saw 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. It has changed dramatically. The athleticism, the strength, the conditioning, the shape these guys are in is extraordinary. Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, to take nothing away from the guys of yesteryear. They were absolutely the top of their game at that time. Mm-hmm. It's just different. It's just change. We want to see people at their top physical performance. We have more of that ability now than we used to have, just based on the realities of life and the situations that we were living in. So Sandy Koufax, one of the all-time greats, doesn't take anything away from him, but he's not living up to, heck, Lance Lynn in today's game. No offense.
Are you sure about that?
I am.
Lance Lynn?
I'm pretty sure about that. Phenomenal pitcher. Great, but come on now.
Yeah. All right. I'll go with that. Charlie, you were down at what's the event called in downtown
Minneapolis? Taste of Minnesota.
What's the best thing you ate yesterday?
Ooh, that's a good question. There's a stand by, it's the Four Seasons. There's a restaurant in there called Mara, and they have these chicken skewers with bread, and they're very good. But, I mean, you can't go wrong with a corn dog, right?
It's probably one of the few places you can get, like, fine chicken skewers and a corn dog in the same place other than maybe the Minnesota State Fair.
It was fancy and, you know, fair festivities. So it was a nice little duo there.
That's how I would describe a Pete Najarian. Fancy, but also fitting in perfectly at the State Fair.
Well, I will tell you guys this. On 4th of July and then the following day was my nephew had his graduation party. And my wife looked at me as I was going to both these two different events that we were going to. And she said, do you really have to dress the way you dress?
What's wrong with the way you dress?
I don't know. I just don't ever really get it right, you know. And so I might have a nice pair of golf shorts on, but a tank top or something. And she thinks I look ridiculous. And she's right. But it's who I am, guys. I mean, you've seen me at the State Fair. I walk
around. You're true to your brand, my friend.
When's the last time you were in a suit?
Oh. You know, thank goodness, I have not had to wear a suit, guys, in a really long time. But I stopped going to New York because of the pandemic. I haven't been to New York since February of, I think, 2020. So suits are kind of an optional thing now. So the option for me is not to wear it, unless you need a swimsuit. Yeah.
Would you wear a sleeveless suit if you had the option?
Absolutely. And a pair of really nice swim trunks to go along with the whole thing. You know? I think it'd be fine.
remember when LeBron James wore to a game, he wore like the suit that was shorts? Do you remember that?
Yes.
And everyone was like, oh, wow, it's revolutionary. No, it's called the sportscaster suit. Every sportscaster in the country, Pete, and I'm sure you've done it, wear your suit tops and then your shorts underneath the desk.
Well,
that wasn't revolutionary.
I have never done a single show for any of the financial television that I've done where I've been from home where I didn't have a swimsuit on beneath the viewing level. So, you know, you got to be comfortable, right?
We're pulling back the curtain, baby. This is what you get in the final 5 minutes of the
That's
huddle.
That's right.
All right, boys. Good stuff today. Thank you all. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks to Pete. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Sunday. Beautiful day for a baseball game this afternoon in the Twin Cities. If you're going, Astros, Twins, 1:10 first pitch. Inside Twins is coming up after us today. Simeon Wood Richardson's pitches for the Twins today. He's 3-1 with a 3.52 ERA this year. We've got a couple of texts here to the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. Not the least of which is we talked about Pinky McNamara. We corrected the Dropo is Dropo. Hey there, guys. I can't agree with the fact that there's better pitching than there used to be. Jim Cott, Sandy Koufax, Bob Buell, Don Larson, Jim Palmer, just to name a few. So we were talking about this earlier when we saw this text come through, and we all agree that this is kind of ridiculous because there's no way that pitching was better in 30 years ago than it is now, for the simple fact that they're just more athletic now. They have more resources to get stronger, to throw faster, to take better care of their body. They don't pitch as long, so they have better stuff. The pitches that they throw, I think there's a better wide range of them. This, to me, and I think we all agree, this is kind of silly. I mean, these were guys that were drinking beer all night as soon as the game was over, and sometimes heaters during the game. It's just crazy.
Second jobs.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Go ask Jim Cott if he thinks his stuff matches up with Paul Skeens. Go ask him. He's still around.
He'll tell you.
He will tell you no. It's absolutely ridiculous. And that's taking nothing away from those pitchers. They were absolutely phenomenal. They were the top of their game of their era. They had really good stuff. I sure as heck couldn't hit them. But it's ludicrous to say that the pitchers today are not better than the pitchers of 30, 40 years ago, the Sandy Koufaxes, the Jim Cotts. It's just the stuff is so much better.
But
watch it live. I mean, it's crazy.
I would take it a step further, as we said earlier, that I think every single sport, every position, every athlete is better now than they were 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
For the simple fact, and Pete, I'd ask you this, that, I mean, these guys have personalized nutrition plans for each and every one of them. Did you have a personalized nutrition plan when you played?
We did not. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of NFL teams back in the 80s, late 80s, that didn't even have their own area to work out. You literally went to gyms, including the Vikings before Winter Park was built. I mean, let's be honest. So, no, to your point, Dave, I think what they do today, these guys have masseuses, they have the diet, they have the nutrition, they have the weight training, all of that. These guys athletically are at a different level than it was 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, for sure. And you look at these offensive linemen, the guys that, are now in the Hall of Fame and some of those types of things, 265 pounds maybe, and certainly not the same kind of bench pressing, not the same agility, speed, all of the strengths that they all have today. It's just different, and it's okay to embrace that. It was a different era, and now we're in another different era. And I can tell you this, 20 years from now, these guys will probably be much better. They'll have figured out something else that actually makes them more athletically suited for the position that they play.
The only place where I would say that there is an advantage 20 years ago as to now is in the simple fact that guys today and a lot of these athletes now have been playing their sport, and we've talked about this, have been playing their sport year round since they were 12 years old.
Yeah.
And 10 years ago, as soon as 5 years ago, there were off seasons for players, for kids. And they were playing other sports. And you ask any athlete that, you know, Pete, in your day, I imagine you played 2, 3, 4 sports.
Yeah.
A different one every season. And so there is an advantage in that respect. And I think that's why we've seen a rise in injuries, because I do think that, that guys are getting injured way more now than they used to, and little injuries. And I don't think it's because players are, you know, softer. It's that their bodies are overworked by the time they get to be 20 years old.
I've always said this too. I think it's great to have 2 and 3 sport athletes, maybe even a 4 sport athlete in all the way up through high school. Mm-hmm. Once you get to the next level, you've got to make a choice. It is obviously we've seen guys that play basketball and football. I mean, we've seen all kinds of different combinations, but the reality is they want to focus on the sport that they are the very best at so that they can get to the very highest level. And so, yeah, when you're doing the same thing on a daily basis, to your point, there's going to be some injuries along the way because it's all you're training for. But it also makes you better before those injuries maybe start to jump on you. But it is an incredible thing. And I'll tell you what, these athletes today, when you walk into these gyms, Dave, you and I are going to go to some Gopher practices this year, and you're going to see some of these guys. And we're going to drag Charlie along, and we're all three going to be standing there, and you guys will look at these guys just wondering, what on earth am I looking at? To be on the field with them is something totally different than what we even saw 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. It has changed dramatically. The athleticism, the strength, the conditioning, the shape these guys are in is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, to take nothing away from the guys of yesteryear. They were absolutely the top of their game at that time. Mm-hmm. It's just different. It's just change. We want to see people at their top physical performance. We have more of that ability now than we used to have, just based on the realities of life and the situations that we were living in. So Sandy Koufax, one of the all-time greats, doesn't take anything away from him, but he's not living up to, heck, Lance Lynn in today's game. No offense.
Are you sure about that?
I am.
Lance
Lynn? I'm pretty sure about that. Phenomenal pitcher. Great, but come on now.
Yeah. All right. I'll go with that. Charlie, you were down at what's the event called in downtown
Minneapolis? Taste of Minnesota.
What's the best thing you ate yesterday?
Ooh, that's a good question. There's a stand by, it's the Four Seasons. There's a restaurant in there called Mara, and they have these chicken skewers with bread, and they're very good. But, I mean, you can't go wrong with a corn dog, right?
It's probably one of the few places you can get, like, fine chicken skewers and a corn dog in the same place, other than maybe the Minnesota State Fair.
It was fancy and, you know, fair festivities. So it was a nice little duo there.
That's how I would describe a Pete Najarian. Fancy, but also fitting in perfectly at the State Fair.
Well, I will tell you guys this. On 4th of July, and then the following day was my nephew had his graduation party. And my wife looked at me as I was going to both these two different events that we were going to. And she said, "Do you really have to dress the way you dress?"
What's wrong with the way you dress?
I don't know. I just don't ever really get it right, you know. And so I might have a nice pair of golf shorts on, but a tank top or something. And she thinks I look ridiculous. And she's right. But it's who I am, guys. I mean, you've seen me at the State Fair. I walk
around. You're true to your brand, my friend.
When's the last time you were in a suit?
Oh. You know, thank goodness, I have not had to wear a suit, guys, in a really long time. But I stopped going to New York because of the pandemic. I haven't been to New York since February of, I think, 2020. So suits are kind of an optional thing now. So the option for me is not to wear it, unless you need a swimsuit. Yeah.
Would you wear a sleeveless suit if you had the option?
Absolutely. And a pair of really nice swim trunks to go along with the whole thing. You know, I think it'd be fine.
remember when LeBron James wore to a game, he wore like the suit that was shorts? Do you remember that?
Yes.
And everyone was like, "Oh, wow, it's revolutionary." No, it's called the sportscaster suit. Every sportscaster in the country, Pete, and I'm sure you've done it, wear your suit tops and then your shorts underneath the desk.
Well,
that wasn't revolutionary.
I have never done a single show for any of the financial television that I've done where I've been from home where I didn't have a swimsuit on beneath the viewing level. So, you know, you got to be comfortable, right?
We're pulling back the curtain, baby. This is what you get in the final 5 minutes of the
That's
huddle.
That's right.
All right, boys. Good stuff today. Thank you all. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks to Pete. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great week, and we'll see you next Sunday.